We don't have many traditions here at TYT, but we do have one. Drop it. Okay, I feel foolish. Now we can start our power panel. It is Friday after all. Cenk's not here. I am though, so buckle up for that. John, JR is on the panel.
I pushed.
He forced himself on. He's not even sitting on a chair. He's just using the power of his legs.
With the short sleeve, that button down.
Breaking new ground.
Yeah. Was it from the movie Office Space style? I don't know, man. I've always been against it, but we'll try it.
Yeah, but that one's like not that. That's like try. That's a little bit different.
Yeah, I would say that's not an Office Space.
You don't look like Dwight. Okay, but Mark Thompson is here as well. Welcome back. It's been
great
a couple
to be
of
here.
Weeks.
Always great.
You came at a good time because, of course, we are in the fallout from the Comey testimony. We've got Donald Trump's initial reaction to it and a press conference conducted earlier today. But we do have more than that. We're going to take a broader look at what the past 4 months have done to Donald Trump. Are his supporters hanging on, or is there a bit of weakness there? We're going to crack into some data today. We've got two videos that I can't wait to play. One is an ad describing the world that we might create if we allow Trump Care to be passed. That seems, I think, very effective, and so I'm excited for you to see that. And then what do Ted Cruz and Jeb Bush have in common? We've got a video that's gonna make it very clear. And in addition, we have another classic JR mashup of Ted Cruz being tough. And so that's gonna be a lot of fun. But before we get to all that, we wanna continue our coverage of the British elections that we started yesterday. The results for yesterday's UK election are now in, and while it turned out that, of course, the exit polls were not 100% accurate, the Conservative Party did end up losing a lot of seats, and they can no longer create a single party majority in Parliament. So if we could bring up this first chart, you're going to see how it actually shook out in the end. So you're seeing the Conservatives there with 318 seats, eight short of a majority. But also, I think something like six or eight up on what we thought they'd have from the exit polls. Labour jumping up there, gaining 29 seats in this election. You see the Scottish National Party dropping a significant portion of the seats that it had. And if we could jump to this next graphic, you're gonna see the change in vote share. And so you're seeing there that the Conservatives actually gained a little bit as a percentage because the other smaller parties dropped so much. And it seems like some of the UKIP vote clearly going to the Conservatives there. But Labour jumping up by even more. And I've actually seen it described as the largest vote share gain that the Labour Party has gotten in an election, from election to election, since 1945. And so Theresa May's strategy of calling this a snap election to consolidate the gains, whoopsie.
Yeah, it's tough to see that as a vote of anything but no confidence.
Well, we live in Donald Trump's America, so that must be a win. She keeps winning.
Yeah, she did. She is still, you know, single biggest party. And it seems like it's likely that a combination of the Conservative Party and the Democratic Unionist Party could form a governing coalition. We're going to talk a little bit about that based on my long knowledge about the DUP from today and what that might mean. But I know that you were talking before the show about how we have this snap election, which the best description I saw of it was that they were able to initiate, plan, and conduct a nationwide election in the time between the Georgia special election and the runoff.
Yeah, I mean, it's really something to behold, especially given our system, which is this big laboring system, of course, with the longest runway before the actual election, at least when we talk about the head of state. But you're probably thinking, like, well, what would happen if they had a snap election? They call for a snap election today in the US. Well, of course, we couldn't do it in the speed that John just mentioned, obviously. But you'd also think that Trump would not get the even meager vote of confidence that he got. I know he won the Electoral College, he lost the popular vote, and he would likely, I think, be repudiated by this electorate. Were they able to hold that snap election today? But it's really a parliamentary thing. You know, we don't do it in our system, the best system in the world. And as a result, we have to look at these other, and it's interesting that it bears speak about one more thing. She can't just call for it, can she, John? Right, JR?
She needs a. So there has to be a coalition of two-thirds of also the governing body to make sure that they can call for this to happen. So again, with parallels to how it could happen, there would also have to be the same way that no one expects, I don't know who, maybe someone does, no one really expects the Congress and the Senate or anyone in Congress to come together and maybe write up articles of impeachment for the president now because they're in his back pocket. Their interests are keeping him around, even for their own personal interests, even if they don't agree with everything he does and how he does it. So it would still need to have a two-thirds majority of the rest of the body to make it happen.
Which, that's true.
So it kind of would still be a problem to happen.
Exactly. Yeah.
Or if there's a vote of a lack of confidence, I forget the terminology now, because as you said, John, we've been knowing about this for years now.
Yeah.
No, yes. It's a new system, but it's worth looking because we always hear, well, you know, we have the best system in the world. It's a classic adage that's thrown in by every politician. You know, the Americans is the best system in the world. And when you look around at these parliamentary systems, and there are a lot of them. I mean, not just
far more than presidential systems.
Right. You kind of are always struck, especially in the shadow of what's just happened with our election. What would it be like if we had a sort of a parliamentary system where you had to form coalitions, where compromises were forced? I don't know that it would necessarily be better, but this kind of thing would all of a sudden be a possibility.
Yeah, and look, people love when I mention that I was in political science academia. So I'll do it again. If you actually look into how parties are formed and all that in the US, you do have a lot of that. You just don't see it explicitly. I mean, parties are coalitions of different interests. Like the Republican electorate is not one type of voter, it's several types of voters. Now, in a parliamentary system, those would probably be several parties of varying sizes, and the Democratic Party would be the same. I think that there are a lot of good things to be said for parliamentary systems. And I think that theoretically, if we could see the US today, but as a parliamentary system, what it would look like, I think that would be incredibly interesting.
Yeah,
but there are theoretically some downsides as well that people, I think, gloss over.
And before you get, or if you have time to even touch on any of those, it would be interesting just from the standpoint of the dialogue that you would have in this nation. Right now, we have two parties that are edging out everybody else.
Yeah.
And I think you're really right to point to the fact that most people might look at the Democrats or Republicans and go, those guys don't represent me. I mean, virtually.
I think most people do say that,
Yeah, and so you end up with those two parties that don't really represent anybody in some sense. They represent sort of an institutional view of the populace. Edging out everybody else on the stage, right? The debates are a joke.
Yeah, they certainly represent very few people very well. Like some people might be like, I've always voted for this party, but very few people love them. Now, like you could theoretically change a parliamentary system, but you could also just institute something like ranked choice voting or approval voting or something like that, which would allow for more parties in the system, but still be in a presidential system.
Well,
so there's a lot of ways that you can try to fix
it. With the kind of system we do have, then we have more of the, and I say it over and over again, this my team versus your team feel, so that people don't even necessarily have to look so deep into the agendas or the policies that one party or another actually pushes, but just what they perceive them to push and say, I've always voted this way because my grandfather told me to, therefore I'm a lifelong this, and then my team's gonna keep winning. And once you win, you go, we won. You have no idea whether or not that party represents your values.
I think JR's point is really good given this moment in time. We're at a time now where the electorate is increasingly not connected to information that's worth a shit. And so you're ending up with, I think, more of that them versus us, just as he says, a sort of a blind voting. So in that sense, if we were to, I mean, just to extend this bizarre hypothetical, it'll never happen, but to go to a parliamentary system, you might have a little less of that because you'd have more choices from the menu and you might have to evaluate more carefully.
There is still, I mean, I know in the UK, there is still a lot of that, you know, my family has always been for this party. So look, the world is gonna suck no matter what we do. Let's make it suck a little bit less. Now, as I pointed out, the conservatives would probably have to go along with the Democratic Unionist Party if they wanted to create a two-party governing coalition. So I read up on the DUP, and it's a party that a lot of people have a lot of problems with, especially inside of the UK, because of their past affiliation with extremist groups. And they're about as far right as you can get in the British political context. I mean, they're anti-same-sex marriage, they're hard against abortion, and a number of other things like that. Which means that if theoretically the Conservative Party, which isn't as far to the right as that, has to ally with them, that's going to make governing kind of weird and a little bit uncomfortable in a way that I don't think Theresa May was expecting.
And this is that coalition part that is weird, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Now you have to make nice with what's a little like making nice with the extreme right wing of the Republican Party.
Exactly.
Right?
Kind of, and we've seen what effect that could have.
It seems like happened when the Tea Party branch came forward, and then they were pulling them further in that direction. So in order for them to continue to have any kind of pull or get their own agenda, original agenda accomplished, they've started giving in to that direction more. So
yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
This seemed like good news when we heard the way it came out, and which it is. So it came out a big loss for Theresa May, but it's. Could be some losses in there anyway.
Yeah, she may be forced into bed with this party that may do a lot of things that are really not going to be that great for Britain.
Exactly. So why is it that we had this result in the UK? I'm sure there's a lot of reasons. Obviously, it's the timing. It's some of the statements by Theresa May, some of the policies she's pushed. But one incredibly important element of this was the just incredible enthusiasm amongst younger voters to get involved and to cast their vote. So early reports have suggested that as many as 72% of young people voted in this general election, which that's a lot. We don't approach anything like that here in the US. We don't know for sure if that'll be the final number, but for comparison's sake, in the last four general elections from 2001 to 2015, youth turnout was only around 40%. Which means that it almost doubled in this election. You're seeing there even in the EU referendum, which that's incredibly important, especially for those who will be alive for a long time, like younger people. It eclipsed even that in this most recent election. And I mean, we've seen that the vote share in some of these areas was very close. That is easily enough to swing a number of seats to Labour. And it looks like the breakdown of the vote was around 2/3 of 18 to 24 year olds voted for Labour. 1/3 voted for Conservatives or another party. Now, some people are looking at this and their conclusion, which I think seems reasonable, is, well, theoretically, if you hypothetically had a left-wing populist leader in the US context, maybe that would matter for elections. Now, historical note that I think matters, in the Democratic primaries and caucuses, Mr. Sanders won 70% of the under 30 vote. And so, theoretically, some people are saying, well, if that had been a factor on election day in the general election, maybe we would have seen something a little bit more like the UK.
I don't know what the beef is all about. Hillary Clinton ran. Mm-hmm. It's obvious that the American people are leaning completely right. And that populist left-wing candidate that you just spoke of, Hillary Clinton, apparently didn't appeal to everyone. I don't know what you're talking about.
Weird.
there's other aspects of this. And again, I'm always a little worried when anything, when it comes to another country's system.
We try to apply it to ours.
Or leaders.
Yes.
Yeah, we apply it to ours.
Sometimes
but that's just the way
much.
We are. You know, it's just the way we are. It's not all we can do, but it's a natural inclination for us to pull that way. But I think sometimes it's something outside of just, it's part of that. Someone with the right kind of message and approach to getting voters out the way Bernie Sanders was able to do. Was also there's a big event. Brexit was this big thing that the entire world was talking about for a good reason. And then now this particular snap election would affect how they do it. Of course, whoever wins, we knew the leadership was still gonna make it happen, whether or not it's gonna be a softer or a hard exit. So that made more people feel energized to make sure they have some voice in how this happens. So with that in mind, look the way we're approaching these. What we've been a few months into Donald Trump's presidency, people can't wait for the next, now maybe midterm.
Right.
People starting to realize that a midterm election means something.
Yes.
Because as they watch how the coalition still forms behind this clueless president, they're thinking, oh, you mean other members of Congress or other elections count?
Yeah.
We're finally figuring out it's not just a presidential election.
Again, I think my short sleeve friend has a point. And it is that this might have been Brexit, the shock that a lot of people who weren't involved in the process needed to get involved in that process in Britain. And now the parallel, the Trump election and all the things that followed may be the shock to our system, although it's a nasty one to get younger people and more people invigorated to be part of the political system here.
They were in the primaries of this one, so there was that shock. It's just
they were discouraged once their candidate
was. Exactly.
Yes.
And so there was still that strong arm of the DNC or the whole system had happened in the primaries that still shut it down, which then actually will build an even stronger anger.
Yeah, I mean, we're not facing a Brexit necessarily, but there's, every day we get a little bit closer to Obamacare being taken away, and you've got the devastating tax plan that's being debated. You have us pulling out of Paris and stuff like that, and that's extremely consequential. So hopefully people will be inspired in the midterms to vote and try to correct some of that. I would have personally preferred that we not had that situation in the first place.
Of course.
Because you can do a hell of a lot of damage in 2 years, and Trump has already done that. But yes, it could be a silver lining in about a year and a half. But let's jump on to back to America. Although Donald Trump was able to restrain himself from tweeting or publicly commenting during James Comey's testimony, either that or he was drugged with some sort of zoo-grade tranquilizer. He didn't say much. So that's to his credit, I guess. But he has started talking. The attacks have already begun. He tweeted this earlier today. Despite so many false statements and lies, total and complete vindication. And wow, Comey is a leaker. So that is an interesting set of conclusions that Donald Trump came to after careful thought and analysis of what he saw James Comey say. So first of all, wow, Comey's a leaker. It was Comey's personal memo. Who the hell else do we think would have leaked it? I don't know why anyone is surprised that James Comey leaked his diary. That's typically how it goes. I don't think that Reality Winner had his diary entry. So yes, he is in fact the leaker, and he is being very clear that Donald Trump thinks that Comey was lying. Now, Comey was under oath. He also said that Donald Trump lied, and so we might be setting ourselves up for a possible confrontation. We're gonna get to that in just a second with some video of Trump from a press conference today. But that tweet was not the only way that the White House reached out in response to Comey's testimony. President Donald Trump's legal team plans to file a complaint against Comey with the Justice Department Inspector General and the Senate Judiciary Committee early next week, according to two sources. Which is interesting because the Justice Department Inspector General manages Justice Department employees, which thanks to Donald Trump, Comey is not one. So I don't know what involvement they would possibly have in this. But he's interested in legal proceedings, which as you described in today's production meeting, could theoretically count as obstruction of justice itself, which I think is interesting.
The entire idea, the number of times our president shoots himself in the foot and thinking it's a very surface approach to everything. I'm the president, and before that, I'm Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. Whatever I say, everyone's gonna coalesce behind, and it's gonna be the law. It's what happens. It's what's going down. So he can just flippantly tweet now about what he wants to do to someone and how he's gonna approach it. And I have my lawyers come and talk to them. You're the president. We're gonna be outside some of those realms. There's things you can and can't do here. So he thinks they're gonna come in, but I'm trying to pinpoint exactly where he screwed himself. I think it was even earlier this week or last week, and how he decided to tweet something, but it shoots himself in the foot in the long term. So yeah, so in looking to stop someone or call out someone and say they're a leaker and breaking the law, you're actually stopping your entire process or shutting down your legitimacy in a court of law.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you're also politically, I think, paying a big price. I mean, if there's really nothing here, if you're Donald Trump, you want to get to the end of this entire process as quickly as possible. All this whole thing is doing is prolonging everything. It's you think you have a cloud over your presidency before, you're going to have a bigger cloud, and you've just built part of it. I mean, you've just seeded that cloud, to extend the metaphor. I don't see how he has a real interest in this. And the other thing is, we're going to get to the tapes, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. We'll get to that in a second. I have a thought about that as well. Because I think there's a lot, the great American BS machine is in full bloom with Donald Trump tweeting and at press conference.
And even before that, so I don't know if we've mentioned Paul Ryan saying this guy's new at this. It's hard for him to know how to obstruct justice. It's pretty easy. And if he doesn't know, I don't care. Okay, so if a 12-year-old kid runs into the liquor store and steals a Snickers, be like, oh, well, it's the first time he did it. He wasn't exactly sure how to pull that off, so let's go ahead and let him go. No, they jump on his back and treat him like a lifelong criminal because you know what you did? We got to teach this kid a lesson. What happened to teaching a kid a lesson? What happened to law and order?
And similar, another one of the stupid defenses is, okay, we have a point. Maybe he tried to obstruct justice by getting him to shut down the investigation, but Comey didn't shut down the investigation, so it clearly wasn't obstruction of justice. And somebody pointed out, if you try to rob a bank and you slip and knock your yourself out on the way in. You're still trying to rob the bank. Yeah. Still a crime.
Well, also, look, once you've asked everybody to leave the office and you're, you know, keeping Comey behind, you knew what you were doing. I mean, he's a rookie, and look, this is just him getting clunky about stuff. Come on. This is mafia style. Absolutely. Everybody leaves. They don't want to leave. Some of them are borderline insistent on staying, and still you insist that over their protest that they leave the room.
Yeah,
you know what's going on.
He knew what he was doing. So why don't we jump to the first video? So I alluded in the intro that we've got the he said going on, who actually lied. Well, they have different reputations for telling the truth, and one was under oath. So why don't we equalize that? Would Donald Trump be interested? Let's find out.
Be fair, John.
Oh, absolutely.
Remember how nice you used to be before I ran? Such a nice man.
Always fair. He did say under oath that you told him to let the Flynn, you said you hoped the Flynn investigation, you could let,
say that.
So he lied about that.
Well, I didn't say that. I mean, I will tell you, I didn't say that.
And did he ask you to pledge his
And there'd
loyalty?
Be nothing wrong if I did say it, according to everybody that I've read today, but I did not say that.
And did he ask for a pledge of loyalty from you? That's another thing he said.
No, he did not.
So he said those things under oath. Would you be willing to speak under oath to give your version of those events?
100%. I didn't say under oath. I hardly know the man. I'm not going to say, I want you to pledge allegiance. Who would do that? Who would ask a man to pledge allegiance under oath? I mean, think of it. I hardly know the man. It doesn't make sense. No, I didn't say that, and I didn't say the other.
So if Robert Mueller wanted to speak with you about that, you
would be glad to tell him exactly what I just told you, John.
Who would do that? Who would? I mean, come on. Who would do that? That's incredibly suspicious.
Talk.
He's really bad at this. He's so bad at hiding that he's obviously lying and obviously bluffing, because there he says that he'd be willing to testify under oath. Now, the one thing that makes me believe him is that I know that he would have no compunctions under oath from lying.
No, he's lied under
oath. Of course, he doesn't want to do it anyway. He doesn't want to do that. He probably will end up having to do that, because I think this investigation will eventually go there. But no, he doesn't want that.
But again, to go back to the politics of that, I mean, so the president is now going to testify under oath. I mean, you know, this is really way off any agenda you had, pal.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, your agenda wasn't, oh, I'm going to sit down and testify under oath a bunch of times about obstruction of justice in my administration before we're even
so
6 months
bad.
Through the first term.
I didn't even think about it. It's like yeah. So as the question's being asked, like, so would you under oath? His legal team, his administration, his advisors are like, no. Stop. Oh, please don't ask this question. Yes. He's going to say, yes.
But to John's point, look, this guy's lied on more depositions. If you know anything about Donald Trump in business, he's been involved in more court cases and more depositions, and he lies on many, many of them. Obviously, that you know, the Trump University is probably the most, the highest profile settlement that he's been involved in. That was $25 million for fraud. Fraud means lying. So I think he's got some cred in the lying area.
And the interesting thing is the fact that he has to admit that he would say that, yeah, of course I'd be willing to go under oath for the lying behavior that I exhibited when I fired my head of the FBI to stop an investigation into, like, this whole big mess is basically how he described seeing the first year of the Hillary Clinton administration going, saying that she'd be under investigation and all that. For context, someone revealed that on this same day in the first year of Barack Obama's administration, he too was engulfed in scandal. Fox News reporting that he used mustard on a hot dog. So I guess there's a lot of weird, scandalous behavior to go around.
Along with them sesame seeds were there. Who does that?
Dear God. So that's true. But I do want to go to this second video, because again, like, he has to bluff. Like, if you say, would you be willing to do this, implying that a true man would do it, he has to say that he will, even though he clearly doesn't have what he needs to back it up. You're going to see that here. And it's on the question of whether he recorded conversations with James Comey.
And you seem to be hinting that there are recordings of those conversations.
I'm not hinting anything. I'll tell you about it over a very short period of time.
When is that?
Okay. Okay. Do you have a question here?
When will you tell us about the recordings?
Over a fairly short period of time.
Tomorrow, now?
You can hear people yelling, why don't you tell us now? when he says over a fairly short period of time, I see one drop of sweat working its way down his orange face, and he is hoping that everybody forgets about
the
stopping.
He goes so fast. Of course it will. Of course it will. I'll tell you about it, and he goes, I'll win.
Look, just a handy.
Really fast. So it's a very short period of time, which I take to mean as soon as they finish that investigation into voter fraud that he was going to initiate immediately after the election.
Yeah, we got
remember all that bullshit?
Right now, all the burners are taken. Believe me, I'm going to move that on as soon as I move it onto the stove, as soon as I can. The deal with the tape is this. I mean, in handicapping whether a tape or a recording more purely exists, obviously they don't. You don't ask everybody to leave the office so you can have a private conversation with the head of the FBI and then record the whole thing.
Yeah.
Didn't happen. Plain and simple. All the speculation, are the recordings, aren't they? I think it's a false flag. I think it's a great thing that Trump did. He threw it out there, and now the media is tearing it apart. I see it just triangulated every which way. There are no recordings. I'm 100% sure of it.
So this is the thing, though. So after that, he can, the theme of him making news that doesn't help him, they're already going to ask for the Comey memos. We knew that was going to happen because we know those exist. But after today, the leaders of the House Russia investigation between Adam Schiff and Michael Conaway, Republican and Democrat, are now, they sent a request to his White House counsel, Don McGahn, for any record of the White House out of their meetings, these tapes that he keeps talking about that don't exist. And they have to have them in by June 23rd. So there's another level. You said there's evidence. Please send them our way.
There's your very short time, June 23rd. Yeah,
exactly. Yes, that's a short time, not by your standard.
So we await those, although I agree, it doesn't seem likely that they exist.
But I hope they do.
But you never know, maybe. Anyway, we do have to take our first break, though. Let us know what you think about these stories. When we come back, all this investigation and all this stuff that's going on, is it hurting Donald Trump in terms of his base, his core supporters? We're going to break that down. Also, a new ad attacks Trump Care. It's awesome. You're not going to want to miss it. We'll be back after this. Welcome back to the first hour of the Young Turks, everybody. Got some tweets to read for you. During the break, we established the theme here of retweeting blatantly self-serving things. So I'm going to continue that with the ones I'm selecting here, even though the second one, it makes me a little bit sick. Actually, the first one does too. Joshua Olson says, excellent power panel with Johnny Rolla, Mark T. Live, and JR Jackson. Panel always needs more JR. Well, I think everyone is entitled to their opinion.
Cheers.
The next one.
America agrees.
Kimberly, by the way, offensive that you would use that mug on this Wonder Woman's week.
Yeah, that really is true.
I know, I'm kidding. Kimberly Colbert says, how am I supposed to focus on the intricacies of British elections with J.R. Jackson looking like a snack?
Yeah.
Which I no longer now am in the mood for a snack, actually. Yeah.
Can't
thanks to
disagree.
That. Thank you, Kimberly. Also, I loved
I'm straight, but if I were ever going over, I'd hit on him.
I'm straight, but if I was ever a Republican senator, I'd fantasize about him. Gabby Morita says, does President Deferment J. Bone Spurs think that we've never publicly caught him in a lie? Newsflash, we have a lot.
Good call, good call. There's a high profile.
Again, I wish that I had the power to hand out t-shirts, but it sounds like a lot of paperwork. So, but good tweet though.
Wow, okay, that was a cop out.
It is, I'll look into it. We have a couple of announcements. There's going to be a post game today. It's actually available already at tytnetwork.com/postgame for the members. Hosted by Malcolm Fleschner. It also has Dave Kohler and Grace is with them for the weekly world news and totally true or totally bullshit. Also, in place of the post game immediately after the show tonight, Aggressive Progressives starts its stream as soon as we're done with the second hour of TYT, coming live from the People's Summit in Chicago. So a special on location edition of Aggressive Progressive, which will be streaming immediately after the show. The first 15 minutes will be free to the public. After that, it's available for the members. So look forward to that after the second hour of TYT, which is going to be led actually by Grace Baldridge. So that should be awesome.
Wow.
And sorry, I was getting too close to my compatriots, so I'll move over. Anyway, let's jump back into the news.
Just drawing this way.
Sorry, yeah. It's the snackitude over here. Anyway. I hear almost every day that it does not matter what Donald Trump says or what he does. Doesn't matter how bad it is, how offensive, his supporters don't care and they will not change their opinion of him. which I understand why people might think that, but I and TYT are interested in data, and so we have collected it, or at least we'll analyze it today. Thankfully, Quinnipiac has some polls, and they've noticed a striking shift in the percentage of various groups across America who strongly support Donald Trump. So this is strong approval amongst Republicans. Look, it's still high, yes. But it has dropped 10 points on average. You see the trend going down there. That is just from a little bit after his inauguration until today. So look, Republicans are gonna like the Republican president. Nobody's that surprised by that, but a 10 point shift does matter. But let's jump to the next one. Whites without a college degree, the sort of people that we theoretically think are always going to love Donald Trump, dropping from 45 to 35, again 10 points, and a significant percentage of whites without a college degree. If you jump to the next one, you're gonna see two here. White men, white women dropping amongst both. He's still higher amongst white men, and yes, there are still women in this country that strongly support him. I don't entirely know why, but it is continuing to trend down just over 4 months. Now, if you see all voters in this next one, wow. It's down to 25 points from above 30. So in all of these, it is trending down over time, which means yes, it might be glacially slow, but people are catching on. And while those people who no longer strongly support him still probably support him, they might be less enthusiastic about talking about him, donating, showing up to vote, and that matters. And we're just 4 months into this trend so far.
I think that's a really good point, the last point that John's making, because you know, it's easy to say on a poll, well, I don't approve of the guy as much. I mean, that seems demonstrably clear that, you know, life, at least based on some of the things he's articulated, is going to get worse for many of those groups that we just saw. Having said that, how does that really, okay, now you're on a telephone poll or an internet poll or however they do it. I think it's generally telephone at this point. But the fact is, how does that manifest itself in terms of action among that group?
Yeah.
And what John said is how it helps the progressives and the left, because they're less likely to turn out. You're going to have a Hillary Clinton syndrome, but it's going to be happening on the other side. And that is, yeah, I hope she wins because I don't want Donald Trump to win, but I'm not going to go vote for her. I
mean,
I'm
not going to. You just don't care. Really.
It also allows you, if, again, with messaging and trying to win even midterm elections, you can run against him without saying, look how much this guy came out against us. Yeah. Which is what was happening during the election, because he's that kind of character. So now you can, there's people who feel let down, as we saw the same way that those the trend is going down. They feel like there's an opening there. So that distance is an open of this many people who are thinking, I need someone to let me know that they actually are gonna do something for me.
Yeah,
maybe they've
exactly.
been, maybe there's an awakening to whatever he said that I, for some reason, I'm still not sure how they believed he would do what he said he would do that got them in. There's that gap to be for someone to come in and say, I'm gonna do those things.
Now here's the bad news. I think that there is still a void there that will likely be filled by a GOP candidate. I don't feel as though these are people who are looking for just anybody. Those things are gonna get so bleak that they're okay, I'm gonna go across the aisle. No, probably not. I think what it does is it opens the door for another GOP candidate or for another GOP opportunity. I mean, there are others on the bench.
For a primary?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, some people say that John Kasich might try to do that. I think that the odds are always against anyone who tries to primary their own party's sitting president. That's always gonna be difficult. But it is possible, and maybe he won't be the president at that point.
I think that's more likely, and under any number of scenarios that we run out, you know, in this forum before. But I think it's possible that, you know, he steps away or one term's enough. I mean, it's not at all unprecedented for a president to say, I don't want the second
term.
That's
possible. I think the odds of him being impeached are still incredibly low.
No,
so,
I agree
so
with that.
Low.
I think
but him stepping away, that is a little bit more likely based on his personality.
It is unprecedented for a president to say, I don't want my second month, which I think he did kind of say.
Yeah, this is, this is much harder than I thought.
Much harder than I thought, man. My previous life was so great.
Yeah.
I could golf as much as I'm golfing now.
And so at the same time that the strongly approve is trending down, if you look at strongly disprove for a lot of these groups, that's also shooting up. I mean, it's hit almost 90%, I think. You're seeing there. Wow, that's high. That's really high. So let's not go to any more of these, because we do want to move on in a second. But Especially for the young people. I mean, the strongly approving for Donald Trump amongst the youngest voters, 18 to 34, is like nothing. It's like nothing. And more of those people are going to be voting in the next election. And the people who are younger than them, I don't think that they're closet Trump lovers. And so again, this is always going to be trending in a way that does not work in the GOP's favor, assuming that the Democratic Party doesn't do something ridiculous to shoot itself in the foot. But why would we ever assume they might do that? Anyway, let's move on to something else. Senate Republicans are currently rushing to push through their version of Trump Care. And a new ad is seeking to remind people of what world might exist if this version of Trump Care becomes law. And you're gonna see it right here. So that's the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee there putting out that ad, and that's powerful.
That's a great spot. That's a great spot. It just says it all. I mean, without a word ever being spoken.
Right. So, and again, that's the thing. When I look at these types of any commercials in general, I've been a commercial watcher, very focused since I was like a kid. So you look at small cues that they always put in things to give a message without you even seeing it. So of course they choose what it is that they're selling. His truck, it's not like a sports car. It's his work truck.
Yeah.
He can't work anymore.
That.
He put his tools on his shoulder, like, I'm gonna walk to work now.
That's but true.
It's her wedding ring comes off, and then also, not her jewelry, it's her wedding ring. So this family you guys are all about is getting symbolically broken up. And then she's touching her sick daughter with the same hand. Now it's missing this. It's every aspect of it.
Brilliant. That's a great breakdown. Yeah. That's absolutely right. I'm seeing all those things without even realizing it. That's a great breakdown.
Yeah. And look, you could theoretically, like anytime some big, like when Obamacare was proposed, I'm sure there were ads from the Republicans implying, you know, horror scenarios and everything. You can do that. But thankfully, in this case, I mean, we've reported over and over and over on Trump Care from back during the primary when we talk about the things Donald Trump would say on healthcare, what his goals are, and then breaking down the likely effects of it, pre and post amendments and all that. It is bad. It's really bad. It's going to cost you a lot. And a lot of people, millions upon millions upon millions of people, will lose their insurance. And we've done it many times. I'm going to do it again in just a second, breaking down all the bad components of it. But that's difficult for people who are busy or who are working, like in that ad, to absorb. But that sort of ad makes it pretty clear. But just really fast, let's run through some of this. This first chart is gonna show the absolutely massive tax cut that is, at the end of the day, the ultimate goal of this plan. I mean, we're talking about almost $600 billion in the next few years that'll go to the richest people that this planet has ever known. The Tax Policy Center finds that repealing the tax that is a part of Obamacare would amount to an average tax cut of $0 for households in the bottom 90%. And I'll save you some time. That's me, and that's probably a lot of you as well. By contrast, members of the top 0.1%, who each on average make more than $3.75 million annually, would get an average tax cut of $165,000. So people who are already doing very well will get riches basically showered on top of them. And one thing that's often lost about Obamacare, which is a flawed piece of legislation, it has a lot of problems. If we bring up this chart, you're gonna see that the effect of the Affordable Care Act was a change in average income that if you were in the bottom 10th, the second 10th, represented percentage points added to your income. This was, in effect, an income equality bill that helped to lower the absolutely dreadful income inequality that we have in this country. And that theoretically will be lost as well. We've already basically said, but the CBO estimates that the number of uninsured Americans would climb by 24 million if the law took effect. And I've seen estimates showing at least 30,000 premature, unnecessary deaths every single year as a result of this bill being put into effect. But directly to what you saw in that ad there, a recent analysis examined the likely effects of the proposal on premiums for people with medical conditions. For conditions like asthma or diabetes without complications, the researchers predicted insurers would seek premiums more than twice as high as the standard rates. For people with metastatic cancer, Insurers would ask for premiums 35 times higher than usual, pushing premiums well beyond $100,000 a year. And so in that ad, that girl did not have a sprained ankle. She was there for something bad. And her family, it's not hyperbole, it's not exaggeration to say that families will go bankrupt, businesses will be shut down, and people will die if the AHCA becomes law.
That's exactly right. It's a deadly serious thing. I literally was going to say some of the words that John just said. I mean, it's just that ultimately you're in a crisis mode when you're dealing with all of these different maladies. These aren't normal visits to the doctor. These are all in those items that we just saw. These are all things that throw a family into crisis.
Yes.
And they will do everything they can to pay those bills. But in a horribly flawed healthcare system, which is America, under Obamacare or anything else, this is a crap system we have. But the Trump modification of it, if you want to call it that, turns it into a crap fest. I mean, it's horrifying. I mean, it's literally horrifying to see all these families who will be facing both poverty and death as a result of it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a crap situation and they want to set it on fire and make it that much worse.
Yeah, it's steaming, fiery crap. Thank you. You're right.
If we have any artists in the audience, feel free to put together an artist conception. We'll post it on the next show. Anyway, unfortunately, we do have to take our second break. Feel free to share that ad. It's going to be in our video, but it's already out there. You can see it on the DSCC's Twitter. Very powerful. More people need to see it. But like I said, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we do have something light to close out the show, though.
Thankfully.
It involves Ted Cruz. He is a fool. He is a dumb phone. We're going to make it clear when we come back from this break. Welcome back to the first hour, everybody. John and Mark and JR. It's the snack hour here on TYT. Anyway, okay, before we get to our stories, and we've got a fun one coming up for you in just a second, I want to recognize two of our members who I realize this hasn't been updated. Maybe you've already been recognized, but you know what? You're going to be re-recognized here today. Members Charles Porter and Taria Peterside, thank you for being members and supporting us and thereby having access to the post game and the members only shows and all of that. We appreciate your contribution to what we do here. I want to read a tweet for you. Dr. Chaos MD, which that's an interesting little handle you got there, says
that used to be a series on ABC in the 80s.
Was it really?
Yeah, Dr. Chaos MD. Was it really?
I didn't watch a lot of TV in the 80s.
Actually, that's not a bad name. Anyway, go ahead. Dr. Chaos MD on
that's
Twitter.
My new web series coming to Nerdist. Once again, the party of family values screwing over American families so their donors can make more money that they don't need.
So true, and just so nakedly clear. Like, you know, there used to be some sleight of hand, political sleight of hand associated, but now it's just so nakedly clear.
Yeah, and I wish... I don't think this is too much to ask. I wish the rich of America would spend less time donating money to politicians to try to make more money and more of their time enjoying the fabulous wealth you already have. Like, go sleep with a supermodel or buy an island or something, man. Eat the best food in the world. Stay in the nicest hotels. Enjoy the rest of your life being the sort of life that we will never experience. Go do that for a few decades, you jackasses. You're wrecking the world for the rest of us. Because the undercurrent is that if you don't do that and you keep fucking over the country, there are examples from other parts of the world of how the people eventually respond. They will take a lot of shit, but they won't take it forever. And I don't think you're going to like where that might go.
That is true. Dire, I know, but actually quite true.
Yeah.
And seems inconceivable in this country, but as the separation gets bigger and bigger, as that gulf between those who have really comprised the super rich has grown from those who have little or nothing, and they're getting littler and nothinger, things will not continue.
Yeah. Yeah. Study the history of Latin America, South America. The way extreme income inequality works is for 99% of the time, it's really bad for the people at the bottom. For that last percentage point, it's really bad for the people at the top. That's the way it goes down historically. Again, dire, but possibly true. Anyway, let's move on to our last story. I want to be able to get to JR's montage that he put together. Ted Cruz just can't seem to catch a break. He was speaking this week at the Faith and Freedom Foundation, or maybe it's the Freedom and Faith Foundation. They probably have both, and I don't really care. But look what happened to this poor son of a bitch.
So what I want to say to the men and women here is two things. Number one, thank you, thank you, thank you. Thank you for your prayers. Thank you for your passion. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your energy. Thank you for speaking out and working to retake our nation.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage the Southern Regional Director of Faith and Freedom Coalition, Virginia Galloway.
Peace.
You couldn't hear, but she was smiling and she whispered, "You cuck."
Jesus.
He in his defense, he had him. They love that sort of BS.
Well, no, but also in their defense, they were right. They knew the theater of it. Hey, buddy, you just worked it up, crescendo,
yes.
Mic drop, you're done.
Yes.
Yeah, let's bring on the next load of BS.
Yes. Like George Costanza, man, just leave him happy. You got him, just move on. And you also couldn't hear him because they actually cut his mic, that poor bastard. But what he said, and we should have really put in subtitles, was they're kicking me out. They're kicking me out the door. And if you don't know what I mean there, let's roll this next video, see if you can remember this from the Republican primary.
That's it. Thank you. They're kicking me out the door. They're kicking me out the door.
Governor, thank you very much for joining us today.
The forlorn head bob is the best part.
And I like that. That was the most pathetic thing I'd seen in a long time. But they didn't cut his mic. They let him say something.
I mean,
Ted Cruz
the most
is
pathetic. Then he went over the top. You'll remember with the please clap.
Yeah,
remember,
that was so many
even more pathetic.
So many cringeworthy moments.
Poor bastard. No,
but to continue the thought of like what happened with Ted Cruz is they were still trying to help him. Cutting the mic is because he's done, and we don't want something across a live mic.
It'll be even more awkward, right?
Yeah, if he actually says, "Yeah, I got those stupid some bitches." when do I get the hell out of here? You know, you don't want that to go out.
Yeah.
But while it's always fun to make fun of Jeb Bush, and maybe someday we'll get back to that for the next primary, I guess. Let's beat on Ted Cruz a little bit more. So there he was trying to be like passionate and fired up, and I've seen a pastor in the South in my day, and I'm gonna try to do it, but he can't do it. He just comes across as artificial, and he comes across as even more artificial when he tries to be a tough guy. Let's watch.
So I gotta ask, what are these things? Is Barack Obama coming? And we will protect our servicemen and women's constitutional right to keep and bear arms and defend themselves. That means the next time a jihadist walks into a recruiting center in Chattanooga, Tennessee, he's going to encounter the business end of firearms wielded by a dozen Marines. We will take on the EPA. And the CFPB. And the alphabet soup of government agencies that strangle small businesses. And we will unleash booming economic growth. I will go to Congress and we will pass fundamental tax reform. We will pass a simple flat tax. And when we do that, we should abolish the IRS. I will instruct the Federal Department of Education, which should be abolished. I will instruct the Federal Department of Education that Common Core ends today. Under no circumstances will Iran be allowed to acquire nuclear weapons. And if the Ayatollah doesn't understand that, we may have to help introduce him to his 72 virgins.
You smart motherfucker. That was from September 2015 at the Values Voter Summit. I always get it mixed up if it's Values Voters or
Value Voters.
It's Values Voter. I have to look it up.
Okay.
It's plural singular. Sorry. You know, so he has this booming economic hand pocket. Like,
and I'm going to tell Hulk Hogan that the Common Core ends today.
It's very WWE. Yeah, it really is. He's so over the top. And just, I mean, it is laughable. I mean, I understand that audience wants that.
They liked it. They did like it. But that's That is exactly the only people that do. I mean, Ted Cruz has a small issue as a candidate, and granted, he became a senator and everything, but he's a small issue in that he's a weenie and nobody likes him. And that's true for not just all libs, but a lot of conservatives. And his own coworkers in the Senate despise this guy because there's something so incredibly oily and false about him. And not everybody gets to be that really rousing speaker. I've never done a WWE intro. I don't know if I'd do it well. I've done it off camera a lot, but I don't know if it transitioned well to an actual arena. So I don't try to do it, okay? But he wants to be that tough Republican, and I just don't think he can sell it.
I wanted to find the Lindsey Graham quote about Ted Cruz. What was the Lindsey Graham quote? He said, I like Ted Cruz, but if Ted Cruz were, somebody will, in the TYT family will tell me what it is. Something along the lines of, I like Ted Cruz, but if you were shot on the floor of the Senate, you'd have, no one would step forward as a witness.
Yeah. Wow.
Something to that effect. It was very. So he's not, as to your point, he's not well-liked because although it does play well in the room and it does play well to his base that has supported him and elected him, he can't extend it beyond it. It does play as artificial. It's crazy. And it is so much fun to see him just get yanked out. I mean, that was just brilliant.
That is true. Yeah, and by the way, this is obviously fun. That's one reason we're doing it. But if you're wondering, I mean, like, this is a guy who's still very young. He will be in future Republican primaries. So let's not let people forget between today and then that he's a weenie.
Yeah, and by the way, he's relevant, and he may make some modifications to his style, which might make him more palatable.
That's true.
And then he gets scary. Look, we laughed at Donald Trump. I mean, we really did. And
I still do.
Still, yeah.
But yes, you're right. We do understand.
Yeah, no, he's that politician. He go for every moment. Like, he tries to be funny in other moments, angry in these ones, and then try to be conciliatory and then be like, I'm gonna take over. So he molds to whoever he thinks is gonna work, but it's all fake.
If he ever smooths it out, it could be dangerous.
Yeah, it's easy to mold yourself to an audience when your body is literally made of wax. But anyway, that was unnecessary. Okay, that is unfortunately gonna have to be the end of the first hour. Thank you to JR, who you can find here. And Mark, where can people see more of your work?
I have a very popular podcast at edge-show.com. There has to be a dash between the edge and the show. It's edge-show.com. And the entire TYT family is welcome.
Oh, we love it. Okay, when we come back from this break, Grace is going to be taking over. And we've got some great stories. I mean, we're going to be talking about the opioid crisis. We're going to be talking about gay panic and how states across the country are trying to protect people's right to murder people who are gay. It sounds crazy, but we're going to break it down when we come back from this break.